America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you are listening to another windswept episode of Let's Weekend. I am, of course, your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Filippo Ninolfo, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Elogi, and Teresa Sammons.
Hello.
Say hi.
Hello.
I'm very wet.
But really? Not because of what we're going to be talking about.
No.
So this episode we are recording for September 8th, 2017. And as we speak, Hurricane Irma is almost made its way over to Florida. So for this episode, we're calling it Hurricane 2 Irma Boogaloo.
Yeah.
With now number three right on the heels.
Better prepare your anus for nature.
Yeah. For the record, I was originally going to call it Irma-gurd, a hurricane, but I thought that would be insensitive. So
well, we might have regretted that show title by the end of the weekend.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Especially here in Georgia, because it's basically going to stay a Category 1 all the way up through Georgia.
Yeah.
And it's basically riding Florida's dick all the way up to Georgia.
Yep.
You're going to get fucked.
Yeah.
Yes, we... Fortunately, though, once they usually get around here, they usually weaken pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So
well, she's
we'll get some rain and probably some heavy winds for a little bit, but that's about it. That'll be just about it.
You got a generator?
Yeah, we got a generator.
Hell yeah.
We also got rid of most of the trees around the house. So
that helps a lot.
Yeah.
Doesn't help with your neighbor's trees and all that shit. If you
they did the same thing.
Utilities. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're good. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Sweet.
And most of these trees, trust me, a lot of these trees have weathered much heavier. So,
yeah.
But yeah. So, it's basically a week after the devastation that was wrecked in Texas by Hurricane Harvey. We now have the next, even stronger Hurricane Irma. Right behind it, well, you'll find out. We got another hurricane called Hurricane Jose, and behind that is a tropical storm named Katia. And
it's a hurricane now, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it is now a hurricane.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is actually the first time that's happened in about a little over a decade.
Hmm.
The last one time that happened was right around the time of Hurricane Katrina.
Hmm.
And then before that was around the time of Hurricane Andrew.
Yeah.
Which
is way stronger than Andrew.
Yeah. Although not as strong as the hurricane that came out in the early 80s. That one actually managed to get up to 190. So,
which one was that?
I can't remember, but...
Yeah.
It was nasty. I saw somebody suggesting Irma's about five times as strong as Andrew.
But yeah.
I'm not sure about that, but no.
Hurricane Andrew was pretty bad. You have to understand, we humans tend to have kind of short memories. Hurricane Andrew was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Historically
this one's
bad.
Twice as big.
Yeah. So.
Like, it damn near wiped out half the state of Florida, like, off the map.
Yeah.
That's how strong we're talking.
Yeah, that was the one that really devastated the orange groves, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it also basically caused a big flood up here in Georgia.
Shit.
Called the Flood of 90. I think it was, Hurricane Andrew wasn't around, like, 1993, 1994.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, because we had... Like, it's still talked about here. It's called the Flood of 94.
Hmm.
It basically put half of central Georgia underwater.
Jesus.
Yeah. But,
Weather is not something to fuck with.
No, it is not. But, anyway.
Randomly show up and, hi, I'm nature, fuck you.
Yeah. But,
so randomly.
Yeah, now, so, yeah, as you can probably guess, yes, the hurricane stuff is going to be our primary subject for this week's show. We've also got some other stuff to talk about. Whether or not we manage to get to them is another story. But Well, you'll find out.
Yeah. And so will we.
And, and all this and more on yet another edition of Let's Weekend. So, start us off. Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So I'm still slowly progressing through The Reality Dysfunction by Peter F. Hamilton. Yeah, that's actually quite good. I thought it was going to be like one of those really weird type stories, but I'm actually liking how it's progressing, and I like the characters, and there hasn't been too much in the way of like gratuitous sex, so maybe I'm not far enough in. So
yeah. But
anyway, it's a good story. The narrator is actually quite good because it's John Lee, and he's awesome. He should read all of Peter F. Hamilton's books. Forget that Toby Longworth guy. He sucks.
Yeah.
But anyway. So I've been listening to that. I also went on iTunes and got Baby Metal's first album. My head is... Yeah. talk about, like, taking left turns. It's like... Yeah, these songs, like, diverge into, like, completely different genres, and they, like, eventually get back to where they were. It's like, okay. It's like I'm listening to a metal song, and all of a sudden it's, like, Japanese hip-hop. Like, okay, how did we get here? And, oh, okay, now we're back to metal again.
Yeah,
it's really good. I actually think that first album is better than the second one, to be perfectly honest. Give Me Chocolate.
Carte Blanche. They can do whatever they want now.
Yeah. I think Give Me Chocolate is probably one of the better songs on that album. Yeah, it's a good one. Definitely recommend checking them out. Even if you can't understand the lyrics, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it really doesn't.
Yeah, it really doesn't. You can read the translations if you want. They're on the internet. Not like it really matters, but yeah. So, been doing that pretty much it for as far as music goes, and then I've been watching a lot of Mythbusters, just going through that series run over again. Thinking of probably starting up Top Gear again and going through all of that, since the series is pretty much done now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're trying to keep it alive, and there's a new Top Gear USA.
Yeah.
I haven't had a chance to look into yet.
Yeah, that one I'm going to check out probably this week, see how it is. Might be good. I'm waiting for
the original Top Gear USA guys are working on a new project from what I heard.
Yeah, that's still a thing. The Grand Tour is still filming, although it was delayed because of Hammond's accident, because he apparently can't work on a TV show without almost killing himself. So that happened again.
This time it just randomly decided to catch fire while he was driving it.
Yeah, he didn't,
He didn't, like, crash. Gouge his head through the ground this time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah, he's still pretty shaken up. I think he did bust his leg up a little bit, but...
Yeah,
so that's going to delay things a little bit, but I don't think too much. Other than that, I've just been playing some random games, Diablo 3, Defense Grid, The Awakening. I started playing that again because the 10th anniversary of that game is coming up pretty soon. I figure I'll brush up and maybe I'll do a video series on it. And might be fun.
Right. So, okie dokie.
Yeah, so that's pretty much it. How about you, Pat?
Well, a while back on this show I talked about a gig that I was starting up at Puck Planet, which is a... newer, but so far I would say fairly successful hockey site. My first piece for them went up last weekend, and I'm already working on my second. And yeah, that's a thing. I'm a hockey writer now.
Yeah.
So just really excited for the season coming up and looking forward to all the work I'm going to be doing there. And of course, I've been playing some Final Fantasy 15 because that's a great way to sort of fill in any downtime that you might have.
Yeah.
15?
14.
Not
okay.
15. Did I say 15?
I don't know. I've had too much to drink to tell you for sure.
Well, that means you're doing it right.
Yeah.
Where are you at on Brandon's server?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Same place I was at when we talked about it last.
Hmm. Okay.
You're going to be picking up NHL 19 when that comes out?
Yeah.
Or 18? Or 19? Well, I don't know what year we're at anymore.
It'll be NHL 18. It comes out on, I want to say, Friday.
Hmm.
So, not today, but a week next from Friday. Today.
Yeah.
So, we'll I've already got the money earmarked for it, so that'll be a thing. One of my friends, who actually the managing editor over at Puck Planet, got in on the early access for it, so he's been streaming it and YouTubing it. Really, really solid game from what I've seen. They addressed things in this year's game that I didn't even bother griping about because I thought that any sort of solution would be years off.
Hmm.
So, hell of a good first impression, and I haven't even played the fucking thing yet.
Yeah. But
really looking forward to release.
Hmm. Cool.
Sounds good. All right, so let's see, who's next? Chris?
Yeah. So one of the games or the movies I watched this week was Alien Covenant.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all right.
Yeah, it was a perfectly average movie.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was more interesting than I thought it would be,
mm-hmm.
Especially since I didn't watch what was the previous one that wasn't actually an alien movie, but was...
Prometheus.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I heard them start talking about it, I was like, I probably should have watched that first.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well. Because they definitely make some references to it, I assume.
Yeah, a little bit.
Like the John Denver song in there and things like that. It's like, I should probably have seen that before, but oh, well.
Mm-hmm.
I have it, so I'll probably watch it soon anyway. Yeah, it's one of those movies that only makes sense when every character does the dumbest thing possible. It's like, oh, hey, our whole point is that we go to this specific planet that we have scoped out as being pretty okay to colonize. And halfway through, we decide we're just going to go to this other planet. Because it just somehow shows up and there's this John Denver song attached to it.
Mm.
That the redneck on the crew decides we should go after that. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. As for some game stuff, Destiny 2 came out this week, and I've been playing a good bit of that. And that is a really nice big improvement on what the early Destiny was, even late Destiny as well. There's more story in the first couple missions than there were in like the entire original game.
Hmm.
Which is not really a huge surprise. Especially when they get to actually make the game that they want and not just have to like cut a whole bunch of stuff and just paste it all together into a working product.
Yeah.
And so far there's a lot less grinding to it. Like I'm not literally using guns or armor and gaining like XP on them to essentially trash them for whatever materials they drop out of it.
Hmm.
They got rid of all of that stuff, so you just, if you scrap something, you just get Glimmer, which is the main currency in that game. And it makes it a lot easier to just get rid of stuff,
yeah.
Which is nice. I'm not sitting here like, okay, I gotta use this gun for a while to max it out so that I get the armor materials out of it or the gun materials out of it so I can use that to upgrade this other gun. And then eventually I'm gonna feed this other gun once it's fully maxed into this other gun so that XP goes, so that base light level goes up. And it was just kind of a weird...
convoluted
system. A weird, yeah.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. At this stage of when you're playing, would you say, how would you compare the quality of this to its predecessor?
Let's see. I would probably say it's like maybe Diablo 3 Ultimate Evil Edition compared to the launch version of that game.
Yeah, that's a pretty big improvement.
Way huge.
Okay,
just made
then.
It a lot better to play. Lots.
Holy shit.
More,
like, you actually do. So, in other words, you feel like you actually have a finished product. In other words, with enough content.
It feels like a cohesive product.
Yeah.
That was, you know, designed and plotted out, and they actually pretty much made all of that. Instead of like, oh, we made this whole big thing, but we have to get it out in a year, so we have to cut out all of this stuff. Like, it's a very cohesive product that feels like this is probably pretty much what it was intended to be.
So it doesn't feel like, you know, there may have already been stuff in there that Activision came in and said, nope, we got to take that out, we got to make that DLC.
I don't know about making it DLC, just more like, we need that out in, you know, 12 months.
Right.
Or else this contract's going to shit.
I
guys
gotcha.
Gotta get this finished now. That sort of thing, but...
So it doesn't feel rushed, in other words.
No.
Okay.
Weirdly rushed for a game that's in the works for like 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
In a weird way. And certainly... I'm doing some cool stuff in there. I just finished one of the missions where they just you have to go get this CPU. I forget exactly why, but when you get it, it's like, oh, you've alerted every single enemy in this area to your presence.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get the fuck out of here. And they just give you a fucking tank to drive out of there, like a tank Warhawk. Not Warhawk. What's the vehicle from Halo?
Warthog?
Yeah, Warthog. It's like that, but a tank.
Mm.
So you're just sitting there just fucking driving it through hive enemies and just busting up shit. Like, all right, we got to get out of here. You can't actually shoot with it. That's the only bad part of it.
Mm.
But I guess you're not supposed to shoot, really. You're just supposed to run stuff over and feel like a badass. I'm definitely looking forward to playing more of that. And I've been messing around with some of the clan stuff, which they just turned it on in-game.
Mm-hmm.
You can just form it and sort of accept requests and all that to join it. I just picked up my clan banners from the farm, which is the new social area, which has its own little things to do in there besides just managing inventory and buying stuff and things like that, which is nice. One of the weird things is you go find these binoculars that the person, Soraya, who sort of set up all this, because the whole thing is the tower gets destroyed, the light that governs all of your abilities as guardians is taken away from you, and so then you're kind of dealing with stuff without any of that, where essentially, like, the light essentially lets the ghosts sort of respawn you.
Mm-hmm.
So they tell you, like, don't die, because I can't bring you back.
Mm.
Which, obviously, is a game. It's not going to actually permanently kill you, but there's some... she is sort of the person outside of the whole light system that... helps all the guardians sort of refocus their efforts to potentially take back Earth, these other planets, and that's where this whole farm is at. And there's like a little soccer field you can play soccer, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Which, one of the weird things about the tower is there's this weird black ball that you hit and it bounces around like a beach ball, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of turned that into an actual mechanic. And then there's like, it's like best of three or first of three, sort of, and when you get to three, it shoots off a little fire. It's like, hey, you won. But I did this other thing where I was finding these binoculars that she was using, and it feeds up this little, hidden quest, and as you do that, your character gets these weird little boosts to speed and jump, so you can jump higher, run faster, and then eventually you get to this point where you kind of can jump around, not really like ridiculously like Crackdown, but it's kind of much better that way to get around than the people that are just getting there for the first time.
Mm.
It's a weird little thing, but it seems to kind of reset between sessions in the farm. I don't know, but it's a little bit weird. But there's supposed to be like more of that type of stuff that they put in there, which I'm looking forward to just seeing what's that there. But just being able to go through patrol of the different areas, sort of the open world aspect, actually start up story missions in there.
Hmm.
That is just these little BS side things is a huge thing. Because you can actually just go around, just grind and do public events sort of stuff. And then just say, ah, screw this, I'm just going to go do the story. And it's really nice and seamless way to do that stuff instead of just, okay, you got to load back out to the main hub menu, then pick a mission, load into it, and then eventually, like, where you're spending like 5-10 minutes just setting all this up, and managing your like dailies and all that stuff. It's so much better now. But yeah, that's been pretty good to jump into so far. And, the other game I've been playing a good bit of is Voodoo Vince on the Xbox One.
Ah.
Which is a pretty solid platformer. But it definitely still feels like a platformer from nearly 15 years ago, where the camera gets a little bit weird at times, not really the greatest at letting you be able to judge distances. So it asks you to do some hard jumps that you're kind of just trying to make on blind faith in that you understand how far Vince can jump or double jump too, and so far it's been pretty good, and some nice little bit of humor to it that is almost kind of Psychonauts-esque, but not quite there. And the styles kind of reminds me a lot of Psychonauts as well. But yeah, that's been pretty good so far, and I've been doing some more YouTube stuff. The free-to-play game I've featured this week is Frozen Freefall Snowball Fight, a free-to-play puzzle game. It's on everything, I think, PS3, PS4, Xbox 360, Xbox One, PC, mobile. And it's Bejeweled, but with Frozen characters. And it's got a ridiculous amount of levels, and it's like 285, I think, in the main set of levels. And I'm like, I think in the video, I am not even 10% of the way through that. And it's kind of ridiculous, but also has like a ton of stuff to buy if you somehow want to do that, but you don't really need to. Though, yeah, it's all right. I'd rather play Gems of War, because I feel that's a bit more fair in terms of what it offers, but also that game's actively supported.
Mm-hmm.
They just put out a big update for Gems of War this past week. Adds a new crafting thing. It's for, I think, the gems that you can use to upgrade like perks for each of the cards you get. And they also added dungeons, which I don't even know what the hell that is.
Mm.
They added, I think they added two new areas that you have to go beat all the story quests in it first before you can access that extra stuff. So I'm still working my way through that. As for the other video I did this week is celebrating Driver San Francisco's 6th birthday.
Wow.
Which was a really good sort of return to form for that series, just as Ubisoft kind of killed it after that. So we haven't had one since then, but it has a really great premise to it where you're playing as Tanner, the longtime series protagonist, who is trying to they finally got the longtime villain Jericho in prison, and he manages to break out, steals the prison transport van that he was in, and basically crashes into Tanner's car, and you seemingly continue on like that never happened, and you find out, oh, Tanner's in a coma. And as a result, he has this ability to sort of separate from his body and fly around the city of San Francisco as a spirit and inhabit other people's bodies and take over whatever they're doing. And so that's sort of how it injects these different missions. And then, like, one of the first missions you do is you take over an ambulance driver. And it has some pretty good writing of him, like, figuring out what's going on. He's like, what? I'm Ray? What? And it's some fun stuff. And that's a game that's... It's a shame that the game either didn't do well enough to keep going, or the Ubisoft machine has swallowed up Reflections and made them work on everything else. So they've been working on, I think, Ghost Recon Wildlands, The Division, and a bunch of other stuff. Grow Home, Grow Up, all that sort of stuff. And it'd be nice to see Driver make a return, but the crew is probably too big at this point to let the driver return. But that's been kind of it, other than we are freezing around here. It's like 40 degrees in the morning now for the last week or so.
Oh, that sounds delightful.
Yeah. Especially when you got to be out in it. And it's like, oh, I got to wear a good jacket in the beginning of September for the first time in a long time.
Hey, you know what? You know what? People make a big fucking deal about buying clothes for their kids for back to school. Well, now they get to goddamn wear them. We don't buy back to school shorts. Now, in Kentucky, we may have. Now they get to wear this shit, although I didn't buy a single thread of back to school clothes. So, you know, that's a hypocritical comment for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have much outside clothing. Yeah. It's like my outside exposure is like I park in the parking lot, then walk inside the building.
You got it.
If I can last for the 2 minutes it takes to do that, I don't need anything. You know, I don't need a rain jacket or like heavy duty winter clothing or jackets or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just got to keep me alive enough to get inside the building. That's my
The key phrase there is alive enough.
Yeah. My boogers can thaw out inside the building.
Oh my god, isn't it great when you have booger sickles?
And it's like, oh, I can't breathe anymore out of my nose.
No.
My nose is frozen solid.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. That's pretty much it. How about you, Brandon?
Well, it's Teresa. So,
me next?
Yeah.
So much goddamn Final Fantasy 14.
Yep. It's been a lot of fun.
It has. I've gotten my white mage on Brandon's server. You know, we've officially renamed it Brandon's server.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten her to 48, and I could have hit 50, but my wrist is killing me, so no Final Fantasy today. I've got my first three Yokai Watch weapons. I don't know if I'm going to go for the all 13, get the remaining 10, and get the Whisper Go-Go mount. I have the Whisper Agogo from last year's Yokai Watch shit from on the other server, on my other character. But I'm past the Garuda fight, so I'm chugging through a Realm Reborn. Mm-hmm. Probably could have shelled out the $20 and moved my character, but yeah, I also kind of want to keep a presence on the other server, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's a lot easier to find parties, not just because I'm playing White Mage, but also because, you know, it's an American server and the schedules are lining up.
No, I fucking love playing with you because I start up the duty finder and it queues up immediately.
Yeah, I know. I never have to wait. It was the same when I was tanking too. I hardly ever had to wait. It was great. But tanking, I decided it was just, it was a little more than I was comfortable with. So I didn't want to be setting the tone and the pace and leading the entire party. So White Mage is all right. White Mage is all right. And it was pretty easy to unlock and get my Soul Stone and all that shit. So that's been happening a lot. So much. But I did take a break and played the Silent Age. That's just a point-and-click thing that I believe was probably developed for mobile. For Android or iOS, probably tablets. And that was all right. It was a quick four-hour game. I found the puzzles to be really fucking annoying the last 2 hours of it. The first 2 hours, I was pretty good. And then after that, I'm like, God damn it, I gotta finish this shit so I can be done with it. So that's pretty much my review on that game. It was a compelling story. I did enjoy the actual story of it. The voice acting wasn't shit, so most of the voice acting was all right. It had, you know, twists and turns and stuff. But I never once figured that even in a video game, I would be stealing a disco ball.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Plus one for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. But I have been binge watching Deadly Seven Sins.
Seven Deadly Sins, the anime? Yeah.
Yeah, the anime. And I believe I'm getting close to the end of season one. I'm kind of doing a little bit of field research and trying to get some more current anime under my belt, too. And I've been
You picked a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember my brother talking about it, and he was so pissed that it took a while for season two to come out, or so he thought it did. I thought they did 2016 and then 2017, but I could be wrong. So, I don't know. He seems to remember there was a big gap between seasons one and two.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm doing that because tomorrow night we're doing a live podcast in Elgin, on anime. Mm-hmm. And that'll be fun. We go to this place called the Blue Box. It's a Doctor Who inspired cafe. And,
is it bigger on the inside than it is on the outside?
You know what? It actually does look that way. It really does. Cause it's just like this old building and they have a bunch of stuff in there, like a nail salon and a hair place and all this. And there's a corridor type hallway going down the middle. And you look at it from the outside and you're like, what, really? How are you going to fit like 40 people in there? And it's a bad fit. It really is. when it gets that crowded, it's a little uncomfortable, but I'm pretty sure tomorrow night won't be too bad.
Yeah.
So been watching that and, dying to finish it. I went to pick my kid up and I was in the, what do they call that? The pickup line, duh, with my car because I was not fucking walking today. Mm-hmm. And I was in the middle of an episode, so I whip out ye old friendly phone and start watching. And I'm like right at a part where there's a bunch of, killer bugs and shit. And all of a sudden my kid is at the window and he screams, boo! And yeah. That was it was very startling. I had no idea. It was after 3:30 at that point in life. So that, Kimmy Schmidt, we've been working on that. We got through season two. We're in season three now. And everybody's hair got different. And I don't get it because it seems like we just watched it 2 days ago and now everybody's hair is different.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, that's how binging actual people shows, live acting, whatever the fuck shows. Someone give me another drink. I need it. Goes. And I've been jamming on quite a bit of Salt and Pepper. So
old school. God.
What can I say? I miss the 80s and 90s sometimes. So
we were younger and sexier back then.
Oh, so young. So young. Maybe more hormones back then? I don't know. Probably not now. Junior high.
All right.
So what about you, Brendan?
All right, yes. So, first things first, yes, Final Fantasy 14. Still doing it.
Are you?
I am now. I am now ankle deep in Heavensward now.
Fuck you. I mean, sorry. I mean, no.
Okay. Getting salty in here.
Oh my god. All right.
But yes, so I'm at the part now where we're actually in Dravania. So met the first friendly dragon.
What do you think of the supporting cast of Heavensward so far?
Let's see. Well, Lady Iceheart's cool. Alpha Node's awesome. Obviously, the Azure Dragoon himself is, you know, him.
Well, you already know him because you've done Dragoon.
Yeah, I've done the Dragoon thing already, so I know who he is. The Count.
Did you do the Midgard Sormer fight? Do you have Midgard Sormer as a?
Yes, I did.
Yes,
and he's following me around, and
I know he sits on your little shoulder. It's so fucking awesome. You got a dragon parrot.
Yes, and he was bitch to fight when.
No, the fight was great.
Yes,
It
was great, and it would have been a greater if it weren't for the fact that our healers suck.
Oh, yeah, that happens. Even good healers have shitty days.
Yeah. But yeah, we did that. Of course, I've been in and out, been actually in Ishgard now. And, you know, the actual city. And of course, I went out to, you know, both western and eastern parts. And, you know, the actual scenery was a lot more varied than I thought it was going to be.
Well, god damn it, you've gotten further than I have on my main character on my main server. But, you know, you probably haven't been shitting around leveling fishing and cloth working and leather working and all that other shit, too.
Yeah.
You don't play with ADHD, huh?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I usually save the little stuff for when I'm waiting for a duty to kick in.
Yeah.
But, oh, did I, oh, and I have to mention, the shit that happens before Heavensward starts, wow.
You mean the political shit?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
everything goes south so goddamn fast.
Yeah, the monetarist shit and all that?
Oh, yeah.
Remind you anything?
Oh, of course it does.
Yeah.
That whole goddamn storyline is just way too relevant.
Yeah.
Yeah, poor Robom lost his arm, dude.
I miss that cutscene?
No, you're not to it yet.
Fuck. Okay, that's all right. I don't care. I'm sure he'll get a really cool Magitek arm at some point in life.
Yeah. Well, you know something serious is fixing to go down because the game basically tells you you're fixing to see a bunch of cutscenes. You may want to go ahead and make time for it because
it doesn't drop that disclaimer on you very often.
Yeah, it's best like shit's fixing to go down. Get ready for it.
I just
make
heard
popcorn
because
you're
going to
need that.
Yeah,
that
and you're to the
Pat.
Point where Robon got a new voice too, aren't you?
Yep. All of a sudden, he's British now.
What, really? Fuck!
Like, half the cast gets, like, new voice actors for some reason. I don't know why.
Yuri gets a new voice for more unfortunate reasons.
Yeah. I mean, for the record, I do know... Oh, you know what? Fuck it. I might as well. Basically, you end up getting, at the end, like, a Bolivian army standoff. Where it looks like everybody's going to sacrifice themselves so that you can escape.
Yeah.
The science.
Yeah.
And I know for a fact that most of them survived. I know Ida survived because, well, Stormblood. And
yeah.
I know that,
Papelimo or whatever the fuck his name is.
Yeah.
Little dude.
Yeah.
Papelimo. Yeah, Papelimo. There it is.
Yeah. But, yeah, so that's where I'm at the game right now.
Okay.
So, other than that, I've also been still playing more of E6, you know, Ark of Nepishtim, because E8 comes out Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Shit.
I got it. I've got it ready. And I will be playing the shit out of it once I get it. I can guarantee you that.
I've already got my copy pre-ordered.
Yep. And I really do hope this particular one sells really well, because I want that series to still be a thing over here.
Yeah.
Well, they've been committed to getting all of it on Steam, right? I think that helps a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This isn't Exceed, though.
Yeah, who is doing it now?
NIS America.
Yeah, they got a new partner.
Sure. For the East games, not for the Trails games. Trails is still Exceed, as far as we know.
Okay.
It's just really weird seeing an Ease game go to anyone that is not Exceed at this point.
Yeah.
Then again, maybe it's just because what I'm thinking, honestly, is Falcom is getting ready to release more of their content stateside, and because, you know, Exceed only has so many people that can do translation work, they're trying to sort of diversify it so they can get their products out more quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a
what
valid
I'm
strategy.
Thinking, anyway.
That would be a great theory. I hope that's how it ends up being.
Yep. Yeah. But so I've done that, and of course, reading as usual. I went and got the second volume of Grimgar Fantasy and Nash, which was I talked about the first one. It's basically a more realistic take on what it would be like if you suddenly found yourself waking up in an RPG world.
Yeah.
In that, basically, starting out, you would suck. That's basically the story of Grimgar. It's this guy and a bunch of other people who don't even remember what their past identities were, suddenly waking up in a fantasy world, and it operates kind of like an RPG world, but the difference is that just because they're an RPG world, that doesn't mean that they automatically have amazing fighting and magic skills.
No, they start off as noobs.
Yep. And people die. Because of their, for lack of a better word, incompetence.
Yep.
And I also got volume 2 of the Gwyn Saga, which is Kaoru Kurumoto's famous 100-plus volume fantasy epic that she worked on. They only released the first 5 volumes in English from Vertical Ink. And it basically kind of sort of is the book series that's kind of considered to be responsible for sort of setting up the base for a lot of the tropes that would become very common in JRPGs.
Hmm.
Like, stuff like, the evil empire invading, former enemies becoming friends.
Yeah.
The weird sort of schizo way it approaches technology. Like, it seems to be a medieval fantasy world, but then all of a sudden there's like a teleporter and a laser weapon.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's also what I've been reading, and I think that's just about it. Obviously, the floor is now no longer lava, and as whole summer has yet to come, I'm actually thinking we may actually bypass it altogether.
Yeah,
could happen.
But yeah, it could still happen.
Yeah, it might like wait for the hurricane water to pass by and then hit you.
Yeah.
So.
But, does anybody got anything else they want to add on before we move on?
No, I'm good.
All right, well then. And it's now, once again, time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And this week, I thought I'd talk a little bit about some very little known but awesome, but actually very fascinating bit of comic book history. All right, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go. I'm going to show you guys an image very quickly, and I want you to look at it.
Mm-hmm. It's clicky.
Now, yeah. Now, look closely at that. I don't mean necessarily what's actually going on. I mean the actual artwork itself.
Okay.
It's obviously a piece of, like, mid-20th century fetish art. And, but look closely at the artwork itself and the art style.
It's like, Betty and Veronica and what's that dude? Archie.
No, you're getting colder.
Oh, shit. Well, it looks like Veronica, I mean.
No, that's not Betty and Veronica. Mm. It is comic book icons, or at least reasonable fashion. There you go.
Superman, I know that, but it looks like the guy who drew the Archie comics had a hand here.
Nope. But that is a Superman look-alike, and that is a Lois Lane look-alike next to him. There is a reason for that. Because that piece of artwork that I just showed you was drawn by none other than Superman's original co-creator, Joe Shuster. Yes. So, for those of you who don't know, the original Superman, way back in the 1930s, was created by an American writer named Jerry Siegel and a Canadian artist named Joe Shuster. Both of them were from Jewish immigrant families. And the story behind how Superman came into existence and how Siegel and Shuster basically inadvertently lost all of their intellectual property rights to the character is a major story in and of itself. What would eventually become DC Comics paid Shuster and Siegel $130 for the first story. Keep in mind, this is like in the 1930s when $130 actually went a long way. but they also inadvertently signed away the legal rights to the character to DC Comics. Superman made his first proper appearance in Action Comics number 1 in June of 1938. But that's not really what we're going to be talking about. No, this is years later in the early 1950s. By that time, Joe Shuster was living with his elderly mother, and he was very slowly losing his sight. And so, in order to make money, he started doing various odd jobs. So, he worked for, like, editorial cartoons. He worked for some various publications, providing cartoons and random comic strips. Basically, really just work-for-hire type stuff. Basically, so he could just keep getting food on the table. And eventually, what happened is he got involved with these groups. This publication called Kingsley Books, which is believed to actually have been a front for the mafia. Now, whether or not Shuster himself knew that, nobody really knows. Shuster, of course, died in, like, I think it was 1981. So in order to keep getting food and getting it on the table, he signed up with Kingsley Books, who were working with another publishing company called Malkla. And one of these individuals who was working with that happened to be one of Joe Shuster's neighbors, who was going by the name of Clancy. Nobody has ever been able to figure out who this Clancy guy actually is. All they know is that he lived like a couple doors down from where Joe Shuster did. And Malkla was basically, the name itself was a combination of Clancy and Eugene Maletta, who ran the printing company. And by printing company, I mean he had a printer that he ran out of a basement in Queens. So what this project was, is it was a series of paperbacks called Knights of Horror. And it was a series of small paperback like chapbooks that were basically based around stories of S&M, bondage, kidnapping, torture, that type of stuff. Now, oddly enough, there was almost no nudity in any of this. It was mostly just like the type of stuff I showed you, people tied up and whipped. The only actual nudity that was included would be exposed breasts, but even those were not like, tended to be more from the side, and it wasn't like full frontal.
Right.
And it had stories with images depicting things like humiliation, foot worship, bloodletting, bondage, flagellation, lesbianism, lingerie fetishism, and interracial sex. And basically, these little booklets would be sold sort of under the counter in various shops, sort of the same way that a lot of what they used to call Tijuana Bibles, which, for those of you who don't know, those were little 8-page sex comics that would usually feature like movie stars and comic strip characters, stuff like that. The guy who was the main artist for the Bazooka Drill comics for the Bubblegum, yeah, he did a ton of those back in the day. So this by itself, if this had happened and it had just gone and then gotten, you know, made a little money and then whatever, it would be a footnote. But there's another thing that goes along with it, a very bizarre case. There was a quartet of teenagers who, in the summer of 1954, their names were Jack Coslow, Melvin Mittman, Robert Trottenberg, and Jerome Lieberman, who roamed around the city of Brooklyn, where they would terrorize girls with whips they ordered out of magazines, beat vagrants, set people on fire. At one point, they even beat an old man to death and were actually caught by the police after they were spotted trying to push a man off of the pier into the East River to drown. When the cops, of course, arrested them, put them in, they, of course, were trying to find out, well, what caused it. And, of course, as the word got out, the story behind them, the press started to call them the Brooklyn Thrill Kill Gang. And so while these kids were in prison, the court decided to get them a psychiatrist. You know who that psychiatrist was? None other than Dr. Frederick Wortham, the man responsible for the Comics Code Authority. Dr. Wortham interviewed the kids, and he found out that, amongst other things, they were really into violent comics, which, keep in mind, in the late 40s, early 50s, it was stuff like, you know, Tales from the Crypt, Uncanny Tales, Journey into Mystery, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, like crime comics, like Crime Never Pays and stuff like that. And eventually he discovered that a couple of the accused own a couple copies of, you guessed it, Knights of Horror. And Wortham made the connection between the two. And eventually in 1953, of course everybody knows, in 1953 he put out his book Seduction of the Innocent, which basically, well, it you know, was basically made comic books the moral panic of the day. But the thing about this particular case is, it actually went up to because they linked the Knights of Horror books with the actions of these teenagers, they decided they were going to ban them. And so all the way up to 1957, they took the case up to the Supreme Court. And the court actually upheld the ban on the sale of Knights of Horror. Now, of course, years later, these laws, these... you know, this type of censorship laws would eventually be, you know, worthless anyway, because later cases would basically throw them, you know, basically erase them from the law books forever.
Yeah.
But it's weird how what interesting and fascinating about this is just the weird number of connections you have here. You've got the co-creator of one of the biggest icons of modern American pop culture reduced to basically drawing pornography with the help of a neighbor for a mafia-owned printing business, which in turn would be accused of helping to inspire the crimes of a group of thrill-killing teenagers in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you would like to know more about this subject, please pick up Secret Identity, the Lost Fetish Art of Joe Shuster, a book by Craig Yeo, which I got a lot of this information out of. Thanks, Craig. Nice. And that, ladies and gentlemen, has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid.
All right.
And now you will never be able to look at Superman and Lois Lane the same again.
Yeah, they look better now.
Although I'm guessing that whip has to be made out of kryptonite or something, right?
It depends on what her intent was.
All right, well, anyway. Okay, now it's time for the show proper. And first up are assholes of the week. Our first asshole of the week is, of course, Donald J. Trump, who has basically made it known that he plans to end DACA, that's DACA, after 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so March 2018, apparently it's going to be these Dreamers, as they're called, are probably going to get deported. Because
yes.
Except in Chicago, Rahm Emanuel has claimed that Chicago will continue to be a safe haven and none of our people need to worry about being deported to a place they have never known.
Yeah, because we got to remember, a lot of these Dreamers, most of them came to the U.S. when they were like toddlers, if that.
Yeah.
They have never known anything else but the United States.
Yeah.
You know, worried.
Some of them don't even speak their home country's language.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it seems like Trump is basically trying to dangle these people's lives to force Congress to pass laws he wants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty much.
To fund his
wall. He's basically using this to blackmail Congress into giving him money for building that stupid fucking wall of his.
Our bully president.
Yeah, a lot of people say that Trump is pro-business, but you saw the business community's response to this.
Yeah.
It was basically a big fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's not pro-business. He's doing a great job of driving a wedge between business and the government here.
Mm-hmm.
So, you want to know what top-level racism looks like?
There you go. Of course, on the flip side, he also made a deal with the Democrats to basically not only lift the debt ceiling again, but it's pretty possible that he's going to do away with the whole thing of having to vote to raise the debt ceiling altogether. Pissed off the Republicans.
Yes, it did.
Which is, some people are starting to speculate, is this him basically turning his back on the Republicans? Like, has he just decided, you know, like, I don't like you anymore, so I'm going to go over to these people?
I think it might be more of a case of my way or the highway.
Or it's also possible that he has just that absolute desperation and hunger for, you know, personal attention and
glory.
Accolades that he's like, he's completely okay with screwing over his own political party.
Yeah, I think he's just that petty. He'll just make a deal with the other guys if they're not playing with him.
Yeah. Now, the flip side of that is that if he keeps doing that, he'll piss off enough Republicans that they'll be okay with voting for impeachment.
Yeah, so...
Keep doing that,
keep
Trump! Yeah! Yay, Trump!
You know, if we give him enough rope, his own vainglory is going to hang himself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's already doing a pretty good job of that already. Did you find out what's happening with his son, Don Jr.?
No. What's the latest? I haven't heard in about a week.
Yeah,
or
so
two.
He basically had a closed, what do you call it? A testimony before the committee,
Senate
whatever
intelligence committee.
Yeah. And I found out that number one, that whole thing about how he said he was talking to the Russian folks over at about Russian orphans.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, it was a lie.
Mm-hmm.
He was totally talking with them, trying to find dirt on Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. He could totally go to jail for a long, long time because of that.
Mm.
And they have said as much. Like, dude, like they basically said, Mr. Trump, you realize you could go to jail for a long time because of this, right? And of course, Don Jr. is such a twat. He's like, "But I was trying to find out if you know it was good enough intelligence that you know it could help in the campaign." No, there is no way he can get out of this. The only thing keeping them is if they actually charge him.
Hmm. Yeah.
And then, of course, now we found out that Robert Mueller is now going to be interviewing a bunch of various White House aides, including the likes of Sean Spicer.
Oh, that would be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But and then, of course, we got the copy of the letter that Trump wanted to send to James Comey, which basically showed that, yeah, he was basically trying to commit conspiracy to obstruct justice.
Hmm.
Like he straight up says in the letter, I'm wanting to get rid of you because you're not letting this Russia thing go.
Hmm.
So as Keith Olbermann said, he is now definitely our soon to be ex-president.
Yeah.
Yeah, this just seems to be a matter of time.
Yeah.
He said, as Olbermann said, it could be 2 hours, it could be 2 years, but he is definitely going to be the soon-to-be ex-president.
Yeah.
Because you got very clear criminal intent right here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, I mean, the noose is tightening.
Yeah. Yeah, let's just hope he manages to, you know.
He accidentally kicks over the stool.
Yeah.
Boy, you know, if he's out by Christmas, that would be a great present.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, here's the other thing. And here's something else you need to know. If it's something else you need to know, a lot of his aides and stuff is believed that a lot of the folks in his administration are actually would be complicit. And a lot of this.
Uh-huh.
You know who one of those people complicit would be?
Let's guess.
Vice President Mike Pence.
Yay!
So he wouldn't be eligible either.
And also, Rince Priebus.
Pretty much the entire line of succession.
No.
Pretty much.
Maybe Paul Ryan. Although Paul Ryan... Yeah, so after Priebus, it's Paul Ryan.
Hmm.
Of course, Ryan might also be implicated. Eventually, you're basically looking at President Orrin Hatch.
Yeah.
And honestly, I can with Orrin Hatch for a couple of years.
Yeah.
If we have to.
Yeah.
But anyway.
And when he does get it right, he really gets it right.
Well, I mean, that awesome tweet he did about, you know, my brother didn't die fighting Hitler in World War II just to have Nazi ideas go unconfronted at home.
Yep. Hmm.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah. Yep.
Anyway, so next up, we had that that now infamous fight between Mayweather and McGregor.
Yeah, if you could call it a fight.
It was more like, yeah.
Battle of the Terrible People.
Yeah. One of the folks who were in attendance to that fight was Michael Bennett, who is with the Seattle Seahawks.
Yep. Yeah.
And basically, after the... Well, actually, you know what, Chris? You tell us what happened here, because I'm still not...
processing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so something I don't think was reported much is that there was a potential shooting happening right afterwards.
Yeah.
And obviously, because nobody heard of it, it wasn't a real thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were hearing what they thought were gunshots and telling people to get out quickly so that they could clear out potential innocent people.
Mm-hmm.
And along the way, Michael is singled out by police for obvious reasons of being a black man
walking.
As he says, in the wrong place.
He's a black man walking to most police. That is probable cause, unfortunately.
Yeah, as he wrote a big letter on his Twitter account, sort of laying out everything that happened here. And there's video evidence for most of it.
Yeah.
Conveniently, the point where the policeman threatens to kill him is not on the video.
Right.
Conveniently.
But you do see the other major implications. Yeah. Basically, what you need to know is they put Bennett up against the wall and pressed a gun against his head.
Yeah, threw him to the ground, told him to... He says, as I laid on the ground, complying with his commands to not move, he placed his gun near my head and warned me that if I moved, he would, quote, blow my fucking head off. Terrified and confused by what was taking place, the second officer came over and forcibly jammed his knee into my back, making it difficult for me to breathe, then cinched the handcuffs on my wrist so tight that my fingers went numb. And from there, he's basically... coming to terms with the potential that he could be shot and killed right there.
Mm-hmm.
Wondering if he was going to die for no other reason than being black and in the wrong place. That somehow his skin color is a threat to these cops. Started wondering about his two girls, if he would play with them again, watch them grow up, or kiss his wife again, tell her that he loves her. Kept asking the officers, what did I do? Right in the head writes that they were duty-bound to respect. They ignored that, told him to shut up, and took him to the back of the nearby police car, where he sat for what he says felt like an eternity until they apparently realized he was not a random thug criminal or black man, but actually a well-known football player.
Mm-hmm.
And realize that maybe messing with this guy is not the best thing to do.
And that maybe, holy shit, we almost killed an innocent man.
Yeah. And released him without any legitimate justification for the abuse of conduct. Never once told him why he was being held for any of this stuff. So talked about how this is sort of why he... sits during the national anthem before every game.
Yeah.
Because there is he has a strong conviction that protesting or standing up for justice is just simply the right thing to do. Because equality doesn't live in this country, no matter how much money you make, what job title you have, or how much you give. When you are seen as a nigger, you will be treated that way. Hmm. And lists off, you know, you can only imagine what Eric Garner, Michael Brown, Trayvon Martin, Tamir Rice, and Charlina Lyles felt. And says he's retained a Oakland civil rights attorney, John Burris, to investigate this and explore his options, potentially filing a civil rights lawsuit for the violation of his constitutional rights.
Sue them.
Yep.
Sue the shit out of them.
And then sue them some more.
And pretty much immediately after he put this out, commenters all over the internet were like, I don't know if this actually happens. I need some proof of this.
Well, you got it.
Yeah, the video came out. Showing at least most of what he said here happened on video.
Yeah. It's a bunch of jerks.
And this was in Las Vegas, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So this was the Las Vegas Police Department. Yep.
And afterwards, once he put this out, they petitioned the NFL to investigate him to potentially suspend him or whatever.
Yeah.
And the NFL was like, no, we're not doing any of that shit.
Nope. We're dudes playing all season. Y'all can go fuck yourselves.
That, and I think it was like, there's nothing to be gained from doing any of this. On behalf of these policemen who, there's video proof that they at least did like 75% of what he said here.
Yeah, you know? Even if all the video in and of itself is enough to implicate them in at the least a major civil rights charge.
Yeah. And it also comes in the same time where the police union in Cleveland was real upset that a dozen Browns players kneeled during the anthem.
Oh, I'm
not
going to
hold
the
flag for the next game.
Hmm. Oh, and boo fucking who.
I think the actual police department, along with the Browns themselves, sort of set up a partnership to do more community work outside of the game and inside, and at least start trying to be better about communications between, you know, the civilians and the police force.
Gee, I think.
Obviously wasn't there before. That resulted in a kid getting shot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well.
We got one more asshole of the week.
Yeah, we got one more. Some random asshole hacked into a Equifax, I guess a server, and basically leaked the personal data for over 143 million Americans. Fortunately, I'm not one of them. So
maybe not. People are still trying to figure out if that site is actually connected to a database that would know this. Because people are putting in, like, tests, and the six digits social security number is like 123456, and it's giving out, it's like, oh, you've been affected. So people are sort of trying to figure out if this is actually pinging an actual database or not.
Yeah.
And that the other thing, like when you, if you sign up for the personal identity theft protection stuff that they offer for those affected, you apparently signed up to waive your rights to sue them for this breach.
Yeah.
So maybe even doing that just by putting in your information to see if you've been affected or not. Which people are obviously trying to put pressure on them to just remove that stuff and not be complete dicks when they are the ones that fucked up huge.
Yeah.
Because they're a credit report company, and you don't even have to be a customer of theirs for them to have information on you.
Yeah. It also doesn't mention, a lot of people aren't mentioning the fact that they're a global company and it wasn't just U.S. citizens who got leaked. Lots of European, lots of Canadians. These guys suck. And, we found out why the breach happened, which is really, well, IT guy didn't patch your shit. That's what happens there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and the insider trading. That's great, too.
That's another thing, too.
Yeah.
And the thing, like, this is 6 weeks after it happened. It happened in July.
Yeah.
We're just finding us out in September.
We're just finding out now. And 3 days after they internally found out, three executives sold off a bunch of their stock.
Yeah.
And didn't go through the proper channels to do so. So that seems a little fishy to me. Don't know.
And trying to get them onto this credit monitoring service, which will automatically renew itself at the end if you don't
cancel
take
it.
Care of that.
Mm.
It's a, I think it says here $20 a month.
Yeah.
For their premier tier for this service.
Yeah.
As well as just completely fucking up the messaging after this.
Yep.
Trying to act like they're the victims, even though they've been known to lobby against people being able to sue the companies that fuck up huge like this.
Yeah, these guys are scummy.
Yeah, I was watching the Last Week Tonight episode on credit report companies. Equifax is one of them. And they talk about how like 1 in 20 of the credit reports or background checks has misinformation in it. Like, some people might be declared dead accidentally because they fucked up one, like, data point filling out the form, or labeled in a Muslim man as a terrorist. That's why he's getting rejected for, you know, an apartment. Or a guy named Samuel Jackson, not related to the actor in any way, but being listed as potentially one or all of three sex offenders, despite at least one of them happening when he was 3 years old. So, like, and it's really hard to get any of this stuff fixed.
Yeah, well, I mean, they treat it as if it's their data, but, you know, it's not. It's our data that we entrust to them, even though we technically haven't, you know, consented to do that. They just kind of stole it. And,
And one of the great things John Oliver and his team did is they set up sites that were legally distinct, but potentially confusingly similar to these companies' names, and they got Equifax, FACKS.com, where a company that takes an animal from a shelter that needs a good home lets it come to your house to lick peanut butter off your dick and then immediately returns it to the shelter. Just creates like these websites for these terrible companies in hopes that, oh, they don't confuse it with the other company and think they're terrible companies as well. Oh, and it says here, we also blind small animals with cosmetics. We do not sell cosmetics. We just blind animals. Please do not mistake us for Equifax. Those fuckers are evil.
Yeah.
So.
Guys are jerks. Anyway.
All right. Well, then. Moving on. We do have actually a hero of the week. Now, as everybody knows, there's been these big debates about, you know, and discussions about how do we deal with old Confederate memorials, specifically statues that were more often than not put out decades after the actual Civil War and were usually have connections to groups like the White League and the Klan and during the era of Jim Crow and segregation. But what's funny is the actual descendants of a lot of the major Confederate figures, Lee, you know, General Lee, Jeff Davis, Stonewall Jackson, they're actually far more nuanced and actually the exact opposite of what you would think. For example, Lee's current living descendant, Robert E. Lee V, who is a – I found out he's actually like a coach at like a high school, I think. He's basically said, you know, I respect my great-great-granddad, but it's probably best if the statues of him do come down, you know. you have Jeff Davis's descendants who are like somewhere in the middle. Like they're like, you know, we do kind of think that this is a part of history, but we do also completely understand why people would want to take them down. And then you have our hero of the week, the great grand heroes of the week, the great great grandsons of Thomas Stonewall Jackson. Thomas Stonewall Jackson was one of the big, like, three horsemen of the Confederacy, next to Jeff Davis and Robert E. Lee. He's always been portrayed as this, like, extremely pious Christian man who also was extremely brave and courageous in the face of fire. He, in fact, his so-called nickname Stonewall comes from the fact that whereas other men would during a battle when, you know, they're being shot at, whereas other men would understandably try to find cover when the bullets start flying, he would just sort of bravely stand there, almost defiant, almost daring them to hit him. Well, they talk to Democracy Now, which is obviously it's a independent global news. Highly recommend them. They got in touch with both of the great-great-grandsons of Confederate General Stonewall Jackson. They are, let's see, Jack Christian and Warren Christian. And they basically talked about him and was like, you know, what do you think about the, what should we do about the statues? And they were very unambiguous. They're like, no, you should take them down. like to them, it wasn't even a question.
Yeah.
You know, Chris?
What's up?
Are you gonna fill us in on?
What was that? Sorry.
It was the Stonewall Jackson's great-grandsons. You gonna fill us in?
I didn't put that on there.
Okay, who was it that put that in there?
That was me. I didn't get a chance to go over it completely, but, I mean, you pretty much nailed the gist of it.
Yeah, so let's see. So they're talking with, of course, Amy Goodman, who is, like, the big person at Democracy Now. And so, let's see. They're talking, of course, to Jack Christian, and yeah, he's in Massachusetts, where he's a teacher, and Warren Christian is in Raleigh, North Carolina. They're talking to him, and of course, like we said, you know, these are the great-great-grandkids of Thomas Stonewall Jackson, so their link to the old Confederacy is blood.
Yeah.
You know? And so this, they're talking about this, and okay, so they're talking to Warren Christian, and Amy Goodman says, all right, in Baltimore, undercover, two nights ago. Now, this was, this was back in, this was like September 4th. So, they say, okay, they had pulled down four Confederate monuments. One of them was a monument of your great-great-grandfather, Stonewall Jackson. How you feeling? How do you think? And he's like, this is what Warren Christian said. He says, yes, well, this, like Jack said, had a similar comment up here. He says, I think it's wrote definitely is a product of something that we've been thinking about and feeling for a long while now, but was also very much catalyzed by what we saw in Charlottesville and particularly in Durham pulling down their Confederate monument. So it inspired Warren and I to kind of feel like this was time to write this letter. They basically wrote a letter talking about their feelings about, you know, we are the great-great-grandsons of Thomas Stonewall Jackson, and we think that, yes, the monument should come down. And so Warren's answering, he goes, yes, well, this, like Jess said, this is something that we felt for a long time. I think it's very clear. If you look at the context in which these monuments were put up, they weren't celebrating kind of benign war heroes. They were clearly meant to be things that would intimidate black people and further white supremacy in the United States. Where I work at UNC, there's a prominent Confederate memorial monument statue right in the heart of campus. And since I've been at the University of North Carolina, I have wanted for that statue to be removed and felt like speaking out about it, and now, finally, kind of got the courage to do so. I think Jack and I, and along with our parents, it's kind of some mixed feelings, mixed emotions about being direct descendants of General Jackson. It's not something that I, you know, widely share outside of a very close group of friends. So this is really kind of a coming out in a sort. And also, I think the other thing is, in some ways, I don't feel like it should matter too much, you know, how we personally feel about the statues. But I do understand that it is important to some folks how we feel about it. And for example, this statue at the University of North Carolina. When it was put up, the speaker, a man who was a prominent local business named Julian Carr, talked a lot about how the Confederate soldiers were working to save the Anglo-Saxon race. And then, really kind of disgustingly, at the end of his speech, he bragged about having his, quote, pleasant duty of horsewhipping a black woman in front of 100 federal soldiers and leaving her clothes in tatters. So I think the racist and white supremacist intent of these monuments is clear, and I think it's past time that they're all removed from the public squares of our country. Really, I think that's about the bit. You don't really need to add much to it from there.
Yeah,
I think that pretty much speaks for itself.
I mean, we've got it linked, and they go a lot more in-depth about it, but yeah, they make it pretty clear, you know, this, you know, we're direct descendants of Thomas, of Stonewall Jackson, and, you know, we understand how people may have admiration for our great-great-granddad, but that doesn't really matter in the context of these monuments, why they were put there and for what purpose, you know, it's very clear why.
Yeah.
So.
Hats off to them for, you know, being candid about it.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, a lot of the descendants of the major Confederate figures, you know, find out what they think, because they're a lot more nuanced about it than people give them credit for. Hmm. And most of them are like, no, we understand why people would want these to come down, and we're kind of okay with it. So I just wanted to point this out. We actually have a Confederate memorial here in Macon. And we're already getting that controversy started up here, too.
Like so, before or after?
What do you mean?
Before or after, the past month. Yeah, Charlottesville, the past month.
Yeah.
Trump. Mm-hmm. Even before or after Trump.
Yeah, it is.
Hmm. Yeah, so, well, at least it's happening.
Yeah, the thing is, though, this particular monument is a little, the purpose of it, it's not really about any particular Confederate person, it's more a dedication to the soldiers who fought in the war.
Right.
And so it's kind of a long story, but I'll talk about it another time, but it's not as clear cut as you would think it is. But anyway, moving on from all that, it's here, folks. Hurricane Irma and Jose and Katya right behind it.
Yep. Oh, jeez. That's a lot of hurricanes in one season.
Yeah. Hurricane Irma's first victim is Barbuda. It is pretty much 95% destroyed. Barely even habitable.
One person died. I think it's it right now.
Yeah.
That was I think it was a kid that died as they were, he and his mom were trying to get out of a damaged building.
Yeah.
Luckily, somehow the other like 2,000 people they have there seem to be fine.
Wow.
Yeah. And of course, one of the other major victims of Irma so far is Puerto Rico. Which, for those for Puerto Rico, which, by the way, American citizens, just so you know that, Puerto Ricans are American citizens. That is important to remember. Yeah. We got this incredible story here about a Delta flight that actually managed to beat Hurricane Irma to Puerto Rico. Actually managed to... It attempted to land in San Juan and then leaves before just a hair clip away from when Irma hit the island.
Yeah, from New York.
Yeah, from New York.
That's a hell of a flight. Holy
crap. You know?
That's okay, everybody that's at the airport, have your shit ready when we're going. Yeah, this is the last time you're getting out of here.
It's a hot flight, folks.
Mm-hmm.
You can see like the tracking and see how they're going, and they managed to get there right before it hits. And they got lucky that the wind was supposed to be potentially like 25 to 40.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually 13 to 23, so it was good enough to go. And let's see, they took like 50 minutes to get it turned around and ready to go.
Wow.
Yep.
For anybody that's flown, that's really fast. That's from taxiing in to taxiing out.
That's like changing.
I'm like, damn, did people like run aside along to the plane and hop on?
Pretty much. People got off, got right back, and the next people got back in. And that's crazy.
Yeah.
And they left basically flying the gap between the outer part of the storm and the inner part of the storm.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see like the image there of them basically just following that out of there.
Yeah.
And
you say movie right?
Wonder what color the pilot's pants are at the, during this.
I'm sure they've taken on a nice brownish hue after all of this.
Imagine once they got clear, it's like, all right, free lunch for everybody.
Yep.
It's like, damn, that's like one of the rare instances where you can say, like, hey, Delta actually did something right.
Yeah.
Usually Delta sucks. Just point that out. But,
yeah, Delta.
Or is it United? Or, well, actually, they both suck.
Delta.
Anyway. It's both of them. They're both awful.
Pretty much any airline's got awful stuff to it.
Yeah. Anyway, so we got another story. This one is from Hurricane Harvey. It's a story of a fireman, volunteer fireman. His house sadly did not survive the flooding that came from Hurricane Harvey. But you know what did survive? His fiance's wedding dress.
Yeah.
And somehow the flooding completely took the house, but the dress actually survived.
Yeah, I think their smart thing is they kind of folded it up onto the hangar.
Mm-hmm.
So it was sitting just above the water at its highest.
Had it already been preserved?
Yeah, I think it was in
a thing.
Yeah.
Like
they had it wrapped in plastic.
Well, like there's well, like special fiance, processes. So that means so it hasn't been used yet.
Yeah.
No, their wedding was supposed to be happening pretty soon.
Mm-hmm. Oh shit!
The wedding was planned for next week. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a second.
So they delayed the wedding, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They got bigger things to deal with right now. But they at least saved that money.
Yeah. Insured for the rest of it.
Yeah.
But, that's the thing. Yeah. Wedding insurance.
Mm. Well, anyway, and then next up are probably our last hurricane story of the night. And also was sort of in the running for our asshole of the week, but he just barely missed it.
Mm.
In Florida, the sheriff of Polk County has made it clear that he basically wants to ID everyone checking in at Irma shelters just to find those that have warrants so he can take them to jail.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
He tries to spin it as, oh, you'll be safe at the jails.
Oh, because this is just the time to do that shit, right?
Yeah.
Set up a goddamn road stop like every other county in the goddamn nation. Fuck? Yeah.
Try to say, this guy sex offenders, predators will not be allowed. It's like, there's better times to worry about that stuff. If you're that concerned, set up a shelter for families and everybody else in a different one.
Seriously. Seriously, dude, your state's about to get swallowed up by the sea. You seriously want to worry about this shit right now?
Yeah.
And, if you go to a shelter for Irma and you have a warrant, we'll gladly escort you to the safe and secure shelter called the Polk County Jail.
That's not how policing works.
Just insanely best to endanger the citizens you serve. I hope your tweet goes really viral, and you get benefit you're hoping for.
Basically, this dude is trying to be the new Sheriff Joe Arpaio.
Yeah, pretty much.
And apparently, this isn't like his first quote unquote gaffed in the past. Yeah. He's done some other dumb shit too.
Yeah, but. Well, Twitter didn't exist back then, so that's a plus, I guess.
All right. Now, that's the end of our hurricane stuff for this week. Probably going to have some more next week.
Yep.
For sure.
Going to turn it into a trilogy, apparently. Anyway. Alright, so, next up. North Korea. DPRK. Yay. The Democratic People's Republic of Korea. It's not democratic. It doesn't give a shit about its people. And the only reason it's a republic is because Kim Jong-un hasn't decided to declare himself king yet.
Yeah.
They have claimed now that they have successfully tested a hydrogen bomb.
Okay.
The thing is, do we really believe them or not? Because if somebody tests a hydrogen bomb,
I think you would notice.
Yeah, most people can tell. Like, that's the type of shit you can see from space. Let me just put it that way.
I don't think they're doing like a full test. They've got their underground bunker that they test the stuff in.
Yeah.
And Japan has their sniffer planes that they use to check this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They at least had big earthquakes that accompanied these tests. I don't know if they have how big they were.
Yeah.
The blast triggered a 5.3 magnitude seismological event.
Nope, then it means they actually did it.
Yeah.
Well,
I think it was like a 4-point something later that they think is the tunnel collapsing.
Yeah.
Whoops. Oh, we can't use those facilities anymore.
Nope. beautiful.
Yeah, they estimate this test had an explosive yield of 120 kilotons. South Korean said maybe more about 50. And just to put that in context, Hiroshima was about 15 kilotons.
Okay. That's what I was going to ask.
Well, great.
Wonderful.
They say they can put this on an ICBM.
And then have it shot down faster than you can say, fuck!
Well, now, is it possible that with them creating this shit, that they're just going to blow themselves up?
Well, that's highly possible.
Yeah, considering how their entire nuclear program for the last 10 years has basically been a comedy of errors. Yeah, it's possible they end up obliterating themselves.
Yeah.
I don't imagine that China appreciates them doing that right next door.
No. China is just about ready to tell North Korea to fuck off. Mm. And I've been wanting to say that for quite a while now.
God, I feel so sorry for their people, though, and the suffering that they're going through.
Yeah, it's going to be emphatic.
Oh, yeah. And it's going to get even worse once the Kim dynasty finally falls.
Has he spawned?
It's believed that he has a kid, but two, perhaps. But really, all right, so I've read some stuff from people who, you know, people from the West who have done trips into North Korea, and one of the things they basically tell you is that it's kind of funny to joke about the fact that, you know, Kim Jong-un is a lunatic and that, you know, the whole thing is one giant circus. But there's two things to remember. Number one, it's not too funny for the people actually living in North Korea.
Yeah.
No sure.
And number two, despite how crazy he seems, most of what he does is actually out of logical self-preservation, because he has to keep his people in a state of complete and pure terror, because otherwise
they'd go after him.
Solution. And believe me, there are plenty of people within the actual North Korean military who would be more than happy to roast his piggy ass on a spit,
which is why purges are so frequent.
But anyway, so.
And he does know how to purge.
Yes, he does. Yeah. But anyway, moving on from there, we have now gotten a copy of the inauguration day letter that President Obama left to President Trump on the day he was inaugurated. As everybody knows, it's a tradition that the outgoing president will leave a letter for the incoming president, usually at a little letter in the desk at the Oval Office. And we actually have it.
Yeah.
That's like, okay, so what's he doing? Okay.
Not really a ton that's in this that's like anything surprising.
Yeah,
he tries to constantly say this is an important job. You should be very careful what you do, because you're an important person now, and you've got millions of people that are going to be affected by anything you do. And
yeah,
and because it's written by Obama, he ignored every word of it. So, good job. Yeah.
It's actually not terribly long. It's a. Like, no, fuck it. I'm going to go ahead and read the whole thing.
All right.
It's not very long. Okay. Dear Donald, congratulations on a remarkable run. Millions have placed their hope in you, and all, he underlined, all of us, regardless of party, should hope for expanded prosperity and security during your tenure. This is a unique office without a clear blueprint for success, so I don't know that any advice from me will be particularly helpful. Still, let me offer a few reflections from the past 8 years. First, we've both been blessed in different ways with great good fortune. Not everyone is so lucky. It's up to us to do everything we can to build more ladders of success for every child and family that's willing to work hard. Second, American leadership in this world really is indispensable. It's up to us, through action and example, to sustain the international order that's expanded steadily since the end of the Cold War and upon which our wealth and safety depend. Third, we are just temporary occupants of this office. That makes us guardians of those democratic institutions and traditions, like rule of law, separation of powers, equal protection and civil liberties, that our forebears fought and bled for. Regardless of the push and pull of daily politics, it's up to us to leave those instruments of our democracy at least as strong as we found them. And finally, take time in the rush of events and responsibilities for friends and family. They'll get you through the inevitable rough patches. Michelle and I wish you and Melania the very best as you embark on this great adventure, and know that we stand ready to help in any ways in which we can. Good luck and Godspeed, Barack Hussein Obama.
So, how many vacations has he taken so far in order to enjoy time with family?
He has basically taken more golf trips in the first 7 months of his tenure than Barack Obama did his entire 8 years.
Yeah. So this is a good lesson in how to ignore advice.
Well, what's it going to do now that Mar-a-Lago is going to get flattened?
Anyways, we're going to have to cherry pick stories from
Yeah, because we're gubbing up the two-hour mark.
Yeah, we really are. Yeah.
All right, so real quick, first of all, we now know who what Sean Spicer is going to be doing. He's going to be doing the paid speaking circuit.
Big surprise.
So considering all of the shit that he probably has on everybody, that could be pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like he was the designated driver for a while.
Yeah, just kind of had to babysit everything that was going on in there and had to deal with a lot of the flack from decisions being made around him. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what he actually ends up talking about when he gets these speaking gigs, because you do know he's going to get a lot of speaking gigs.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. All right, so next up, oh, man, this story right here, man. So on Twitter, there's this guy named Eduardo Martins, and he has gained fame as a war journalist, well, a photojournalist, who had helped produce some images that you'd see in magazines and the papers. Turns out he's full of shit. He's a fake.
Go figure.
Yeah.
Was he using stock photos or?
He used other people's photos,
yep,
would mirror them,
mm-hmm.
so flip them, and then Photoshop himself into them.
God.
And so you can see how much people vet these sorts of images.
Yeah.
Because somebody just figured out by flipping them, then doing a reverse image search on Google.
Yeah.
And boom. And
found them.
Found them.
Oh, crap.
Dude had 120,000 followers.
Had.
And his images were sent to people like Getty Images, Zuma, Nerf Photo. Got published in the Wall Street Journal, The Telegraph, BBC Brazil.
Yeah, I found out a bunch of them came from Turkey-based American photographer Daniel C. Britt. And yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And the guy that did this, whatever his name is, has essentially disappeared, saying, "Oh, I gotta go. I'm in Australia. I've made the decision to spend a year in a van. I'll delete everything online, including internet. I want to be in peace. We'll see each other when I get back." This was before, like, the rest of it fell, but, like, the immediate stuff.
Yeah.
Loser. Anything, write me at doodoomartizan23@yahoo.com. I'll give a hug. I'm going to delete this app. Got to be with you. A hug.
Yahoo address. That is bad.
Okay.
Oh my God.
See ya.
All right.
Like, one of the key things you noticed, this other guy that figured this out, is a picture of him holding a camera, realizing the shutter button is on the opposite side where it's typically at.
Yep.
It's like, oh,
oops.
I should flip this image around and see what Google finds.
Uh-huh.
And boom.
There it was.
Sucker.
Dumbass.
All right. Dumbass. All right. All right. Next up. Okay. Who here remembers Initial D?
I do.
Oh, I do.
Yeah, I do too. God damn, that thing was big back in the day.
It was good.
Yeah. It was a racing manga that also inspired a hit anime that in turn inspired a series of popular racing games. It was created by Shuichi Shigino, and of course he ended Initial D a while back.
Fairly recently, actually.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years.
Yeah, he actually had. Didn't he actually have other manga projects that he was doing at the same time?
I would be surprised.
I'm pretty sure he had another racing manga that was based around motorcycle racing. Anyway, he's now back in the driver's seat. With a brand new racing manga called MF Ghost. And the thing is, what's funny about it is, yes, it's based around automobile racing, but there's also some commentary from Shigino about the current state and the future of the automobile industry.
A little weirded out by self-driving cars.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's set in a sort of near future where non-combustion autonomous vehicles are starting to take over. And, you know, where does that leave auto racing? Where does that leave driving in the more traditional sense? And
in the same fucking place where we have horse racing now and people who go for pleasure fucking rides. This shit's been done before. Sorry. There's no fucking big mystery here in my mind.
Maybe
I should talk to him.
But clearly, you know, there's no question what side of it Shigeno's on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Definitely coming to us from the Jeremy Clarkson side of things.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be really interesting to see what kind of world building Shigeno can set up for this, because this is a series that has a lot of potential. And I guess the first chapter or two have been out now. So I'm going to have to look into that pretty soon and just see what he's come up with.
Yeah.
It's about a Japanese race car driver who goes to the UK for a while to just to improve, moves back to Japan, and that's your setting in this, again, sort of near future.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not post racing, but a world where it definitely appears to be on the way out.
Yeah.
It'll be really interesting to see how he takes the narrative.
Yeah.
Well, I personally think the idea of human versus autonomous races would be amazing.
Yeah.
Because you could really tune the AI of those autonomous drivers to be pretty ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
True. You know, it would be like, like playing Forza with actual good drivatars.
And also, let's be honest, as good as AI can be,
still AI.
It's still AI. It can't mimic the type of, sudden decisions and actions that the human body can.
Yeah. I think that's going to play a part of the story too,
And I'm also not sure if you can teach them fear.
No.
Yeah, that's the
because they're programmed.
That's kind of the problem because you don't teach them fear, that means there'll be no problem going over a canyon.
Yeah. It's like,
well, they could do cost benefit analysis. That's the same thing as fear.
Well, no, what I'm thinking is if you're putting an AI in a race, at what point, what happens if it doesn't think, oh shit, this could lead to collision?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure collision would happen.
Like, if we're talking like rally racing or something like that, there's a lot of risks that, you would have to somehow have to manage to think of and program into the AI beforehand. Because you're not just talking about a regular racing course, you're talking about different types of roads, wildlife, weather,
sudden drops,
mechanical
stuff like
failures.
That.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like
the concept
mistake.
Of this, honestly, it sounds really cool.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it's a huge hit and we get the obligatory anime and
brought
and
in over the meantime,
by somebody who knows what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah. And in the meantime, if you haven't, look up Initial D.
Yes.
It is worth reading and watching.
Yeah.
Fantastic series.
In equal measure.
Yeah. All right, let's do a couple more and we'll get out of here.
Yeah, let's do a handful. Okay, let's see. Okay. Okay, here's one.
I want to hear about this Tinder one.
Oh, you want to hear about the Tinder one? Okay.
We can't not do this one.
Okay, so in the UK, there was a date, of course, set up using Tinder, which is basically like Grindr for straight people.
it's basically you decide, you look at a person's photo and you swipe one way, say nope, swipe the other way to hook up. That's that simple.
And basically, it ended up with a poop that actually broke a window.
Oh, you want me to go over this?
Yeah, go ahead, because there's some non-sequiturs in there that you're going to have to...
So, just to give you an idea, this is all being laid out on this GoFundMe page.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how far this went. So they had a date, this guy and this girl, this is the guy's account, is talking about this. There are no names or anything. Went out to dinner, had some fun, came back to have some wine and watch a Scientology documentary.
Uh-oh.
What the fuck?
an hour in to what he calls Louis Theroux and chill. My date got up to his toilet. She returned with a panicked look in her eye and told me she had something to tell me. I went for a poo in your toilet, she told me, and it would not flush. I don't know why I did this, but I panicked. I reached into the toilet bowl wrapped in tissue paper, and threw it out of the window. And so he offered to go outside and grab it and dispose of it properly and prepare, pretend that nothing happened. Unfortunately, the way this window is designed prevented that from happening. Because there is the frosted window on the inside and, surprisingly, another window on the outside. So it's two windows. You can't actually throw anything out. So this poop got lodged in between the two windows. A narrow gap is about a foot and a half wide. Double glazed windows, and began their saga of trying to get this poop back out. She had mentioned to him that she was an amateur gymnast, so she was convinced that she could reach into the window and pull it out. Using the tried and tested inside out bag as glove. I don't know. These are.
It's supposed to be a bag as a glove, like the dog poop picker.
So we use the inside out of the bag. And just kind of holds her up to try to reach over the first window into this gap. And she's not having any luck in reaching this thing. So she tries to go further in. And you can see the picture there of her actually, as you can tell, gets stuck in between the two windows upside down.
Stuck between the two windows upside down, smelling her own giant turd.
And having been in there 15 minutes, where the blood is obviously rushing to her head, she's not feeling great. and they, as he says here, I called the fire brigade. Bristol's finest were on the scene, sirens blaring in a matter of minutes. Once they had composed themselves to surveying the scene in front of them, they set to work removing my Dave from the window using all of their special fireman hammers and tools. It took about 15 minutes. Here's a picture of them working. Unfortunately, although they rescue my date unharmed from what must have been a rather unpleasant confined space to find yourself in the process they had to completely destroy the window with their special fire tools. I'm not complaining. They did what they had to do. Problem is, the quote, to get this replaced is about 300 pounds. As a postgraduate student, that is a significant chunk of my monthly budget. In fact, it's all of it. And he put out this GoFundMe to... he says, so I'm turning to the internet for help. People could just donate a couple of pounds, /dollar/yen/rupee/North Korea won to help me repair my now broken window. I'd be eternally grateful. The window's not replaced. My landlord may well kill me, so you would be literally helping to save a life. And he says, like, any excess funds would go to two different charities. The first one is Toilet Twinning. Mm-hmm. Charity building and maintaining flushing toilets in the developed world. The second is directly to the firefighters charity that helped them. and he got what was it? 2,700 pounds. 200 pound bolt.
Well, he got his window replaced.
Oh my god.
Got his window replaced and donated the rest. And what's funny is one of the first replies is a radio DJ saying, I'll pay the remaining amount if you come on my radio show tomorrow to tell a story. you can still stay anonymous and do it over the phone. But yeah.
Oh my God.
I don't know that he did that, but I imagine he probably didn't because they wanted to stay anonymous and not ruin anybody's lives as being the girl that got stuck between the windows.
With her poop.
Oh my god.
And her fucking poo.
That is talent.
You know, there is not a day that goes by that I am not eternally grateful that I am not on the dating scene. This just reinforces that shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah. All right, so, moving on. America's favorite punching bag, Martin Shkreli.
Yeah.
As everybody knows, his ass is going to jail.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And he recently put up something on eBay. You know what it was?
Yeah.
It was that Wu-Tang album. Yeah, we need the one that the Wu-Tang Clan got together, made only one copy of, and guess who bought it?
Farmadouche.
Farmadouche.
Yeah.
Look, Wu-Tang ain't nothing to fuck with, okay?
Yeah. That's the album was called now. Once Upon a Time in Shaolin, for those who were wondering.
Mm-hmm. And you can now buy it on eBay.
For $1 million.
I think it's up to $1 million now.
No, yeah. It's up to $1 million.
Which, there's a good chance they're probably not going to pay it.
Yeah.
Nope.
Might be trolling.
Yeah.
Bid.
Also,
great
it's...
great thing to do to him.
Yeah. By the way, just on a side note, it's possible they're going to be throwing his ass in the slammer again, because apparently they were going to revoke his bond for his... Because, what was it? Wasn't he involved in, like, some trolling bullshit or something? I can't remember.
Probably.
It was something asshole-ish. Just, that's all you need to know.
$1 million and I still have to pay shipping? What the fuck?
Right?
Dang.
I do like he says he's going to donate half of the sale proceeds to medical research.
Mm-hmm.
He's not selling to raise the cash.
Because
he has plenty of money, but... he wants to donate it to research.
Yeah, right. Sure.
And, I'm guessing we're ending the episode at the line.
I guess.
Yeah, it should be enough.
Hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, then. Well, moving on. There is a girl who now has a 3D printed robotic hand.
Yeah.
Ain't that awesome?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she has announced that she wants to throw the first pitch at every Major League Baseball stadium.
Oh, yeah.
And
somebody
pretty
knows
much
that happened.
All of them have signed up for this.
Yeah.
Cool. They got... they don't have all of them showing here, but if you look at the comments on the tweet, it's one of the accounts for the baseball, various baseball teams, some minor league as well, and even a couple of college teams in there as well, saying, yeah, DM us the info. We'll figure out the schedule for this.
Yeah.
By the way,
if you want to look at this hand, it is pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah, there's a good video there showing it. It's held together with fishing line, and basically she has three fingers on that hand. No, she's missing three fingers on a hand.
Yeah.
So it essentially is her doing wrist actions to be able to clench it and all that, and she's figured out how to throw a ball with it.
Hmm. Yep.
And she's got a bunch of different hands. There's some of the video showing, like, she's already been at the Baltimore Orioles stadium, throwing out the pitch there, as well as the Washington Nationals.
And the hand
and
is color-coordinated.
Like, yeah, she has, like, specifically designed for each team, and the players signed them as well. And she wants to throw out the first pitch at every stadium, which I think would be a Guinness record, something like that.
Yeah. Would also be...
or at least be like the youngest person to do it.
Yeah. Would also be pretty damn awesome, considering all
and
those
I think,
hands
yeah,
are
I think,
homemade.
Yeah, I think the account for her, I assume her parents are running it, is Haley's Hand, Haileys_hand.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're responding to a number of these requests, as well as, I forget who was doing this, Bleacher Report was putting out the initial story.
Mm.
So yeah, like a ton of teams say, hey, send us the information, we'll figure this out.
Mm. Yep.
The only bad part is it's towards the end of the season.
Yeah.
So there's not much time now, but I assume she'll probably get the rest on next season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Since 160 games, she's got plenty of time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially during the summer.
Yep.
All right. Well. Okay, so next up, something very popular with the children these days, Peppa Pig. Very popular little cartoon for young folks all over the world. And, unfortunately, sometimes there are places where they have to pull episodes or redo episodes depending on what part of the world they're in, because sometimes some of the lessons they do don't necessarily apply to that particular area. For example, this particular episode that we're talking about had to be pulled in Australia when it suggested that spiders cannot hurt you. Which in Australia is very, very not true.
Yeah, they can kill you in Australia. Yeah, that's not accurate. It really isn't.
It and just about every other organic matter in Australia can kill you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And wants to kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I see why in the show, Peppa Pig's daddy pig was like, oh, don't be afraid of spiders. They're so small. And then she goes and makes friends with a goddamn spider, and I don't think that's exactly the lesson here.
No.
Yeah, I think and one gift to someone who lives in a country where the spiders are as big as your head and could easily eat you.
Well, yeah. Because Peppa's tucking this motherfucker into bed.
Yeah.
No, just don't do that. No.
Yeah, I think the spider here is supposed to be a daddy long legs, which are not really harmful.
No, those are actually harmless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They could be, but they can't pierce human skin.
Mm. Yeah.
That's actually a myth.
Mm. Yeah, they can. Oh, yeah. Their venom's just not that potent.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. But, yeah. So,
I'd say don't.
Next up, how to make friends with drop bears. Do you know what a drop bear is, kids?
I do.
Well, I'm going to show you what drop bear is.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yes. You know what a koala is, right? Yeah,
they're kind of like koalas, only angrier.
Shut up. Yes, they're like koalas, only they're angrier. And, well?
Oh, is it those mean, rabid mofos with big, sharp teeth and shit?
We're about to find out.
Oh, yep. God, yeah. That's fucking it.
Yep.
Yeah.
These motherfuckers.
It's basically a nightmare version of the koala.
Yeah. They drop out of trees and, like, try to eat
you. I didn't need further evidence not to go to Australia.
Yeah.
Hence
the name Drop Bears.
Yeah.
Which is actually especially frightening because, yes, if you're wondering, you're asking the question to yourself and sort of to us, and the answer is yes, they do attack humans all the time.
Yep.
Yeah. It looks like they will attack anything they can get at.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, all right, last two stories of the night, and then we're shutting it down. All right. Penultimate story. We now got a new trailer for the Netflix version of The Magic School Bus.
Yay.
Yeah, so apparently Lily Tomlin's actually going to be on the show after all.
Yeah.
She is playing Miss Frizzle, and Kate McKinnon is playing her sister, who takes over the class. Another cool thing.
Animation isn't that good, though.
No, none of the new animation is. It's all this shit.
Yeah.
I hate it.
It looks fine to me, but they also play the new theme song, which is done by Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Oh, yeah.
Really? And it seems to be really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you watch the rest of the trailer, they play that, and he sounds pretty much on par with what the original was, as well as just being able to make newer references to things. It looks like the show could be pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm glad they kept the lizard.
Oh, yeah, they kept the lizard.
Yeah. It looks fine. I mean,
lizard, the skeleton's still there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now she can put those kids in bus and put them into life endangering peril. All over again for a whole new generation.
Yeah.
And seriously, this bitch takes these kids into fucking war zones, the human body.
And
outer
no
space.
Fucking booster seats or seatbelts.
No.
These kids are not over 12 or 13. They're still supposed to be in fucking boosters. What is this shit? Sorry.
Of course, if you so watch the original show, it looks like that woman's out of her goddamn gourd. So
she was, I mean, she just hands her class over to her sister, like, "Here, you teach these kids now."
Yeah, it's like
it doesn't go through the school, like, doesn't fed her or anything. Yeah.
Well, it's because she fucking got sued from the first time around. She took him through the goddamn ghetto.
He's called reckless endangerment.
Yes. And finally. We now have a look. We can now get our first look at Rami Malek playing Freddie Mercury in the Bohemian Rhapsody movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I guess.
And he is fucking almost dead on.
Yeah. I wonder who's who they're getting to sing, or if he's going to do it.
Yeah, uh-huh. Like, seriously, he almost look. The only thing is, he's a little bit darker than Freddy actually was.
Not enough chest hair either.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but well, he's not far.
He's trying.
Yeah.
What?
But yeah, he looks almost exactly like Freddy.
Shit, man, he does. Yeah,
almost a dead ringer. Although,
it's a stage shot.
Yeah.
He's looking at the left side of his face.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not as
But like they got the overbite and everything.
That's what I was gonna say. I gotta see him with the
protruding upper lip. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanna watch this movie.
Yeah, I wanna watch it too. Because Freddie was an interesting guy.
Yeah.
It's also good that they got another guy that is of Middle Eastern ancestry, so
yeah.
I was like, "Hey, you're a tannish white guy."
Well, Persian.
Yeah,
there's a difference. because his Freddie Mercury's family were from what's now Iran.
Hmm.
Yeah,
but yeah, and yeah, I really want to see this.
Yeah,
I was actually originally rooting for what's his name. Be playing him. Borat.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Because he almost is a dead ringer for a Freddie Mercury lookalike, if you've ever seen him.
Hmm.
Without all the makeup and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think this role requires actually singing, so that may be maybe a problem.
Yeah. Anyway, so I do believe we've got a show for the night, folks.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, well, I would like to remind all of our listeners that if you have a question, a comment, something you want us to read on the air, or just have something you want us to talk about, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. We've got it linked in the show notes. Also, on top of iTunes, you can find us in our little cast at Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, and basically everywhere else where really cheap, low data audio files can be found.
Yeah. Like that. Yeah, if you have a favorite podcast app, chances are we're on it. So don't worry too much about that.
We're just going to start beaming it into space as a really cheap, low compression hologram.
Yeah.
So to trick stupid aliens to come here and they get killed by all the people in Texas with guns.
Yeah. Then we can rob them and take their wallets.
Yes. Yeah. Anyways.
Anyway, so. Oh, and also, if you do enjoy our show, spread it around. Tell your friends.
Yeah.
Tell your family. Please?
Yes. Share the wealth.
And, yes, share the wealth. Spread it around. Every man a king. But, all right, so, with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. If you are down there in Florida and you were coming up to the Georgia area, stay safe.